Chapter 18. "You snore," Nanette said the following morning. "You snored so loudly I couldn't get to sleep." "We've shared rooms before," Emily reminded her, rubbing sleep from her eyes. "You knew what to expect." She smiled as she stood and headed for the bathroom. Nanette might, or she might not, be telling the truth. Emily didn't particularly care. Nanette really had shared rooms with her when she'd been Lynn and Silent and... She wondered suddenly if Nanette had ever come close to her in a third guise. She wanted to ask, and yet she wasn't sure she wanted to know. It was disconcerting to meet someone so good at disguise that it was impossible to feel truly safe. "I'm getting better at seeing through the disguises," she thought, as she removed her nightgown and climbed into the shower. "And she knows we have to work together until Void is defeated." Emily washed quickly, then donned a simple dress and tied her hair into a long ponytail before stepping back into the bedroom. Nanette was already undressed, looking weirdly small without any of her outfits. It was strange. Emily waited for her to walk into the bathroom, then rang the bell for the maid to order breakfast. If the maid thought there was anything odd about Emily ordering two trays, she kept it to herself. She was used to dealing with magicians. They all ate more than the average commoner. She stood by the window and looked across the field. The army was slowly stirring to life, officers and sergeants barking orders as they readied the men for the coming march. Emily's lips twitched. "Hurry up and wait" was going to be the order of the day, unless she was much mistaken. Jade had already dispatched pickets to the border, and he'd probably want a few units on the march as quickly as possible. But the main body of the army wouldn't be ready to leave for a few more days. Her eyes wandered over the endless rows of ox-drawn carts, crammed with supplies. It was daunting to realize the carts might not carry anywhere near enough to sustain the army once it was in the field. The maid returned, balancing two trays with practiced ease. Her eyes flickered towards the bathroom as she placed the trays on the table, clearly aware someone was sharing the suite. Emily dismissed her with a wave, cursing under her breath. The maid would talk. Emily wouldn't be surprised to discover Juliet had a network of informers amongst the castle's servants. Why not? Jade and Emeka, mainly Emeka, had done the same in Zangaria. Nanette stepped out of the washroom, naked.
"She should have seen us in bed together,"
Emily scowled. "You seduced and manipulated Penny," she snapped. "Even if I was inclined towards women rather than men, I wouldn't sleep with you." Nanette winced noticeably.
"I did what I had to do, even though I regretted the necessity at the time. I didn't see any real choice."
"Really now?" Emily met her eyes. She knew better than to take Nanette's wince at face value. "You ruined her life."
"She recovered," Nanette pointed out. "And once she completes her apprenticeship, she'll be fine."
Emily shook her head in disbelief. Penny's once bright prospects had been ruined by Nanette using her as an unwitting pawn. It was true, Penny had had an apprenticeship with Lady Barb, which had been transferred to Cat when Lady Barb had to take care of Sergeant Miles. But the magical community would never forget. Penny might be happier staying on the far side of the Craggy Mountains, helping to build the new kingdoms and communities in the remains of the Blighted Lands. Cat would be happy to have her. They had a great deal in common. She sat at the table and started to eat. Nanette sat facing her face shadowed. Emily did her best to ignore her. They might be allies, but she simply didn't like the older girl. Nanette was so different from Emily that it was hard to imagine they had anything in common, beyond a shared interest in magic and a common foe. Emily would never have seduced someone to complete her mission. She wondered suddenly just how many people Nanette had seduced. She was so insightful, so capable of understanding what someone wanted, that she would have no difficulty attracting almost anyone. The hunter wouldn't realize he'd become the hunted until it was far too late. "She has a lot in common with the young Void," Emily mused. Perhaps he saw something of himself in her. There was a tap at the door. Emily stood and opened it, blocking the messenger's view of the room.
"Yes?"
"Lady Emily," the messenger said. "Queen Mariah requests your presence in the council chambers as soon as possible."
"Immediately," Emily translated silently. "And Nanette will have to come with me." She nodded to the young man, dismissing him, then turned to Nanette.
"Eat up and get dressed," she ordered. "The queen has summoned us."
"How charming," Nanette said. "And you're going to let her summon you like a commoner?"
Emily shrugged,
It's her castle, she said, and we don't have time to argue. I imagine she's done too much of that last night, Nanette said. She pushed the tray aside, then reached for a simple dress and pulled it over her head. She should just tell the prince to do as he's told, and then turn him into a frog if he keeps being an asshole. She's given him quite enough leeway already. And if she did, Emily asked, how long do you think the marriage would last?
She's married to her kingdom, not to him, Nanette said.
If she can't put the good of her kingdom first, she needs to step down before she gets removed.
Emily rolled her eyes, then put the thought aside as Nanette finished getting dressed. She looked like a common-born girl, perhaps the daughter of a merchant or a magician, with just enough status displayed to keep from being mistaken for a servant or a prostitute. Emily was tempted to ask how she coped, switching personalities as easily as Emily might change her dress, but she wasn't sure she wanted to know the answer. It was possible, from what Nanette had said earlier, that the trick was to let people's perceptions fill in the gaps. If someone anticipated her as whatever she claimed to be, they might have trouble realizing what they'd missed until it was too late. She led the way out of the suite and walked down to the council chamber. Jade and Sergeant Miles were already there, with... Emily's eyes widened as she spotted Melissa and Marcus standing by the table. They looked tired and worn, their magic sparking oddly as they turned to meet her. Emily shook their hands firmly, choosing to ignore the sharp look Jade shot Nanette. She might look like a commoner, but he might not be fooled. He knew Emily wouldn't have brought a random commoner into the council chambers.
Emily? Melissa said.
Her voice was low and raspy, suggesting she hadn't slept for far too long.
I'm afraid I have bad news.
Emily grimaced. Melissa and Marcus had gone to recover Ashworth Manor from Void's forces. That they were here.
What happened?
She looked at Mariah, whose face was carefully blank.
How bad was it?
Please sit down, Mariah said. There was no sign of Dater. I'll have refreshments served in a moment. Melissa sat, resting her arms on the table.
We returned to the manor, as planned, and made contact with a number of distant clients on the estate. They'd been left unmolested, from what they told us. They'd been warned to make no attempt to break into the manor or take control of the Nexus Point, and promised that, as long as they stayed out of the way, they wouldn't be hurt. The majority of them kept their side of the deal. A handful tried to enter the manor and were summarily slaughtered. Their homes were destroyed, reduced to nothing more than piles of ashes.
Her voice faltered.
We had to go it alone, so we did. We used my blood to slip through the wards and enter the manor, then make our way down to the Nexus Point. There, she grimaced. We discovered the Nexus Point was feeding power into a combination of linked spells, channeling magic into another location. We started inspecting the spellware and discovered that any attempt to terminate the spell, any attempt that might actually succeed, would result in a magical surge. It might even destabilize the Nexus Point itself.
We channeled power from the Nexus Point at Heartside to open portals into the Blighted Lands, Sergeant Miles said quietly. Void's copied our concept and improved upon it.
It's worse than that.
Emily felt her heart sink as she put the pieces together. A decade ago, no one would have dared destabilize a Nexus Point. The explosion... She shuddered. The explosion would be bad enough, but the aftermath would be worse, she said. The land around the Nexus Point would die, but... Void can reignite the Nexus Point after the explosion, saving the land. Her thoughts ran in circles. She'd never considered anyone being crazy enough to detonate Nexus Points, not since the disaster that had turned a fertile land into an arid desert. And yet, she could see Void's point. He could destroy the manor and everything else that rested on a Nexus Point, and then reignite the point before the land outside the immediate blast started to die. She wasn't sure it would work. She'd nearly died reigniting one of the Nexus Points in the Blighted Lands. But Void would certainly consider it worth a try. Mariah cleared her throat.
If he can do it there, she said, why can't he do it here?
Emily hesitated. He can, she said finally. But he doesn't have to, not yet. Sergeant Miles snorted.
There's a more obvious question, he said. Where is the power going?
Mountaintop, Marcus said. We managed to get a look at the magical signature. It matches the wards around Mountaintop.
Which is currently in enemy hands, Jade mused.
What's he doing there?
Emily shrugged. Mountaintop was less important than Whitehall, at least in the short term. But Void had every interest in neutralizing the school and everyone within the underground caverns until he'd finished taking control of the continent. The staff included some of the best and brightest magicians in the world, while the students... Her lips twitched. Whitehall was a better school, in her opinion, but Mountaintop students were hardly useless. Marcus and Nanette and Frida were extremely capable. Void would want them on his side, or if they refused, held captive until the war was over.
We have to find out, Emily said. If we can disconnect the power from the far end,
we have to take the army to Whitehall, Jade pointed out. Mountaintop could be nothing more than a giant diversion. We can't leave it untouched either, Marcus protested. We don't know what he's doing there.
And the longer he drains power from the Nexus Point, the greater the strain on the controlling spellware, Melissa added. How long will it be before something snaps?
Jade looked at Emily.
Emily?
Emily forced herself to think. She'd fiddled with the spellware governing the Ashworth Nexus Point. In hindsight, it was clear Void had studied what she'd done and improved upon it. Again. The spellware was designed to channel vast amounts of power into the wards and to improve itself over the years. But it had never been intended to channel power into a school thousands of miles away. Melissa was right. Something might snap at any moment, causing an explosion. She wasn't sure what, if anything, Void might have done to prevent disaster. Was it even possible?
I don't know, she said. Sketch out the spellware you saw. I'll take a look at it.
Melissa nodded.
We'll do it after the meeting. We have to get to Mountaintop, Marcus said. It should be possible to teleport there.
And we still have to get to Whitehall, Jade said. Mountaintop is simply not a priority.
That might be what Void wants you to think, Marcus said. He wouldn't need to channel vast amounts of power into the school if he didn't have an idea of what he intended to do with it.
Sergeant Miles shook his head.
If we get to Whitehall, we can put an end to him and clear up the mess at Mountaintop afterwards.
Why can't we do both?
Nanette's voice was so polite, it took Emily a moment to realize she was the speaker.
We can investigate Mountaintop while the army makes its way to Whitehall.
Mariah blinked, astonished. Emily almost laughed. Mariah didn't have the slightest idea of who Nanette actually was. She thought Nanette was a commoner. Emily wondered suddenly why she hadn't simply ordered Nanette out of the room. Perhaps she hadn't really noticed the older girl. Nanette had been behind Emily, practically part of the furniture. Emily forced herself not to smile. It wasn't going to be easy to smooth things over. It would be a great deal harder if she laughed at the young queen.
Point, Jade said quickly.
Better not to give Mariah time to wonder about Nanette.
But can we afford to take the time to investigate?
We need to know what's happening at Mountaintop, Emily said. Melissa, was there any agreement to set up a link between Ashworth and Mountaintop before the war began?
No. Melissa shook her head. Fulvia would never have agreed if anyone had asked her. I don't think it was even possible back then. I certainly never had any requests to share the power, and if I had, I would have said no. The risk of triggering an explosion was just too great.
Which means he implemented the spellware shortly after taking over, Emily mused slowly. Why would he want to make Mountaintop stronger?
As long as he was in control, it probably wouldn't matter how strong the school became, Jade said. He might even...
Nanette cut him off.
He needs the link to keep the school under control, she said. He's using the wards to render the staff and students harmless. That requires a great deal of power.
Yeah.
Jade scowled.
And do you think we should investigate?
Yes.
Nanette looked back at him evenly.
We should.
We also need to get the army underway, Jade said, and that comes first.
Getting into the school might prove tricky, Marcus said. There were always rumors of secret passageways, but none of the ones I know about can be accessed from outside the wards.
I know one, in a manner of speaking, Nanette said. Aurelius showed it to me.
How convenient, Jade said.
His voice dripped suspicion.
How many of his other secrets do you know?
Most of them are useless, Nanette said. Their value died with him.
If anyone knew a way in or out of the school, it would have been Aurelius, Marcus said flatly.
His eyes were boring into Nanette, as if he was trying to work out if he knew her.
And I imagine he taught some of his favorites,
Emily stared down at her hands. They did have to figure out what Void was doing at Mountaintop and try to stop it. At the same time, they had to get the army underway while keeping an eye on Dater. The Prince Consort's absence bothered her. She had the nasty feeling he was sulking, or worse, planning something. If he got the army entangled with the rebels, the war effort would collapse. Hell, the odds of something going wrong were alarmingly high even if Dater didn't do something to make them worse. "We'll get the army underway, then I'll go to Mountaintop," she said. "If we can shut down his plan, whatever it is, we will." Her mind raced. What was he doing?
"Risky," Sergeant Miles observed. "If he spots you there, he might try to capture or kill you."
"I understand the risks," Emily assured him. "But I see no choice." "Very good," Mariah said. She stood. "We'll continue this later." Emily scowled. She'd hoped to have a private chat with the young queen, in hopes of impressing upon her the importance of keeping her husband under control. It wasn't going to be easy. She wondered idly if she could arrange for a small accident for the prince consort. Perhaps if Dater tumbled off his horse and broke one or both of his legs. She shook her head. Dater would be back on his feet within the hour, unless she cursed the wound, and that would be far too revealing.
"I'll show you what we saw," Melissa said.
She lowered her voice.
"We also found the person you left with us. If we use her—"
"No," Emily said flatly. "It wouldn't work."
"It might," Melissa said. "If he thinks she's dead—"
Emily shook her head. She'd done everything in her power to convince Void that Lady Princess Eve of Dragora was dead, that Emily had no choice but to kill the 8-year-old magician to prevent a far greater tragedy. She wasn't sure if he had been fooled. Void was smart and capable and knew her far too well. He might have been suspicious and poked and prodded at the story until it fell apart. It wouldn't have been out of character for him never to mention it to her. "And I made sure she was harmless, that she'd have a chance to pass through puberty before her magic returned," Emily thought. "I won't throw that away for nothing."
"No," she said.
Eve's attempt to kill her had failed, and she hadn't known what she was facing. Void had. He'd known what was happening all along.
"I won't involve her in this."
Chapter 19.
"The Prince General does seem to be behaving himself," Jade muttered as the army mustered itself for war. "And he hasn't done anything to cause trouble."
Emily scowled, watching as Dater addressed the men. She'd seriously considered suggesting they leave him behind, even if it meant leaving his men behind as well, but she knew Jade would never have agreed. His army lacked local knowledge, the sort of information that might make the difference between making their way through Alluvia to Dragon's Den and being trapped on the wrong side of a river. They needed Dater's men, and that meant bringing him along with them. She had the feeling Mariah wasn't too unhappy. It had been easy to tell, when they'd eaten dinner, that the queen and the prince consort promoted to prince general were having difficulties. The rest of the courtiers had probably noticed as well. "There's no probably about it," she told herself severely. "If I noticed, they noticed too." She tapped her hand against her belt, waiting for the speech to end. Dater had a powerful voice. Nanette had told her she'd been able to hear him from right down the corridor, but Emily doubted many of the gathered soldiers could make out his words. They'd be told later what he said, if it was important. The officers gathered near their leader looked torn between eagerness and a certain reluctance to go home. She'd heard that many of them had found a home and roles in Red Rose. They weren't so keen on making a bid to recover what they'd lost in Alluvia. Nanette joined them, wearing the dandyish uniform of an aristocratic cavalry trooper, with more money than sense. Emily had no idea how she'd managed to get away with it, although, with so many volunteering for service, there were so many newcomers in the army that she might have passed unnoticed. The real cavalry might just take one look, decide she was a useless fop, and do everything in their power to ensure she wasn't assigned to their troop. It was unlikely they'd realize she was anything but what she seemed.
"He didn't do anything, as far as I could tell," Nanette told her. "He gave his queen a passionate farewell, then collected his sword and marched out of the castle. There was no hint he'd set up a conspiracy of any sort."
Jade scowled.
"And you'd be sure to recognize one?"
Nanette sniffed, in an aristocratic manner calculated to annoy the common-born Jade.
"I have set up conspiracies and infiltrated them and torn them down," she said, speaking with casual ease. It is never easy to put one together. If you trust the wrong person, the plot might be exposed before it's too late. If you maintain a degree of plausible deniability, you run the risk of a misunderstanding that'll ruin your plans before they can be put into action. Plotters are rarely trustworthy. If they were, they wouldn't be plotters. And people who betray their oaths might just as easily betray you.
Speaking from experience, are we?
Jade eyed her narrowly.
Did you get betrayed at some point?
Emily cleared her throat. Leave it, please, she said. We don't have time to argue. Nanette surprisingly said nothing. Emily frowned inwardly. She'd asked Nanette to keep an eye on Dater, shadowing him in various disguises to make sure he wasn't doing anything stupid, anything that might blow the war effort out of the water. Nanette had agreed, after offering a series of increasingly violent and bloodthirsty suggestions of what they could do with him. She'd even suggested killing and replacing him, offering to wear his face long enough to lead the army into battle. Emily had shot down that idea at once. Dater wasn't a bad leader. His officers knew him too well to be fooled. She forced herself to relax as the army slowly jostled into motion. It was hard not to escape the impression of a ramshackle arrangement, of thousands of men and hundreds of carts lurching their way down the road, rather than marching in good order. The army was just too spread out to be concentrated in a hurry. Although Jade had made it clear he'd scattered scouts and pickets around the edges to ensure they had warning if an enemy army hove into view before it was too late. The other magicians were sure they had enough magic to keep Void from simply teleporting an army on top of them. Emily hoped they were right.
Mount up, Jade ordered. It's time to go.
Emily scrambled onto the horse, cursing under her breath. Her body was still aching from the last ride. Sergeant Miles cantered past, riding Buzz. Emily's lips curved into a faint smile as he took his place in the van. The horse had done wonders for him, just by being a piece of his past life. Emily hoped it would last. She wasn't sure she could do anything to help him regain his sanity a second time. He made it clear I wasn't to do it again, she reminded herself. And I gave him my word I wouldn't. She looked back at the castle. Mariah was standing on the battlements, waving as the army picked up speed. Emily wondered what she was thinking as her husband headed back to the war. Nanette was sure Mariah was already pregnant, but there hadn't been any formal announcement. Traditionally, one wasn't made until after the pregnancy was confirmed. Emily winced, feeling a twinge of sympathy. Mariah would have a hard time of it if she lost her strong right arm while carrying his child to term. She scowled at Dater's back as he rode on. It would have been easy for him to remain behind, in service to his wife. No one would have thought any less of him if he'd chosen to build a new life rather than cling to the old. He would have, Emily thought, and there'd be plenty of exiles willing to drip poison in his ear. The horse shifted underneath her. Emily sighed and resigned herself to a long and uncomfortable ride. The sergeants were bellowing orders, reminding the men to behave themselves, or else. The threats were blood-curdling, but Emily feared they would be meaningless. If a soldier committed an atrocity, all-out war would break out before he could be strung up or handed over for trial. She cursed under her breath. It would be so much easier if they could simply open a portal to Dragon's Den and bypass Illuvia completely. Nanette chatted endlessly as the hours ticked by, mixing probing questions with vague comments about magic and what she'd learned over the years as a spy and agent of influence. Emily tried to answer, but found it hard to keep track of the conversation. She told herself she should be grateful to be on horseback, rather than marching with the foot soldiers. A handful of canteens and bags littered the road, the men having eaten their rations and drunk their water, rather than spend hours carrying them from place to place. She doubted the sergeants would be happy about that. The dangers of drinking water from streams and lakes were well known. The camps would have to be carefully supervised to keep them from turning into breeding grounds for disease. The border fort she'd passed only a few short weeks ago, when she'd been fleeing Void, was abandoned, save for a handful of cavalry troops who watched warily as the army crossed the border into Illuvia and started to advance towards its planned campsite. Dater had complained for hours about the route, pointing out it would be easy to isolate the army and cut it off from all supplies, as well as being known in advance. But Jade and Sergeant Miles had ignored him. There was no way they could hide the army. Not from a foe who enjoyed powerful magic or popular support. She wasn't remotely surprised, as the army marched through a series of hamlets, villages, and even small towns, to note they'd been abandoned in a hurry. The locals had no faith in the army's promises. Emily didn't blame them.
The prince won't be happy,
Nanette said, waving a hand towards the patchwork fields on either side. Take a look at that. Emily frowned, glancing at the fields.
What do you mean?
Nanette smirked. The locals have taken over the fields, she said. They've shared the land out amongst themselves, rather than leaving it in aristocratic hands. They're not going to want to give it back.
No.
Emily wasn't sure how Nanette could tell. The old order is passing away, like it or not. Nanette's smirk grew wider. How profound. Emily shrugged, returning her attention to the fields as they kept riding. It was hard to see what Nanette saw, but she didn't doubt it. The vast aristocratic estates had been targeted right from the start when the revolution began. The serfs had freed themselves from their masters, taking their land or simply packing up and moving elsewhere. Perhaps the country could have been saved if both sides had looked for a compromise. She shook her head in irritation. It was the same old story, again. The two sides were going to fight it out until one destroyed the other. Her body was aching again by the time they reached the first campsite. The fields lay fallow, abandoned. Jade and Dater spoke briefly to the cavalrymen. They'd swept up and down the countryside, watching for threats, and then started to issue orders. The men started to dig latrines and set up defense lines, while the carts unloaded more rations and handed them around. Emily was relieved to see discipline had been maintained, despite the long march. They barely had any time to pause and catch their breath.
The scouts report a sizable detachment of rebels to the west of us, Jade said as they met in the command tent. They're between us and Jorlam City.
We could crush them, Dater said.
He clenched his fist.
It wouldn't be hard to envelop them before they could get away and destroy them.
Jade shook his head as he drew a line on the map.
We'll keep following the road around the countryside and finally head south there, he said, tapping a crossroads. We do not want to engage the rebels if it can be avoided.
We gave our word, Emily agreed. Dater looked displeased, but said nothing further on the matter as the command staff reviewed the march and issued orders for the following day. Emily kept her thoughts to herself. The men were going to be exhausted, but hopefully it would keep them from getting into trouble. She made her excuses as soon as they'd eaten field rations. Jade insisted officers had to eat the same rations as their men, and headed to her tent. The march tomorrow would be more of the same. We'll be in a terrible state by the time we reach Dragon's Den, she thought. She briefly considered collecting Nanette and teleporting to Mountaintop, instead of staying with the army until it had marched past the danger zone. But she knew she was needed in two places at once. If I dared bilocate again. Nanette clambered into the tent. Feeling your age already? Emily swallowed the response that came to mind. I don't like riding, she said crossly, and horses don't like me. How terrible, Nanette teased. But aren't they splendid judges of character? Touché, Emily said. She'd said that herself, about Jade and Nanette. They're probably smart enough to tell I'm an indifferent rider at best. Then spend more time in the saddle, Nanette said. She smiled in happy memory. Aristocrats love hunting and jousting. It's a good time for wheeling and dealing and generally making them like you. They'll bond with anyone, as long as they're good in the saddle. Emily snorted. I think the price is too high. Nanette laughed. You're probably the only person who'd feel that way, she said. Do you know how many people would kill, or worse, to go hunting with people who could make or break their careers? I tried it once, Emily said. Alassa had taken her boar hunting. It had struck her as sickening even before she'd discovered the boars were actually transfigured criminals. I didn't like it. She lay down, pulled the blanket over her head, and closed her eyes. Her body hurt all over, but the pain slowly faded as she concentrated on her meditation. Nanette was right, she supposed. Alassa loved hunting and never had any trouble finding people willing to go with her. The princes and other male aristocrats she'd met had loved testing their skills in jousting, even when there was a very real risk of being seriously injured or killed. It was like golf on Earth, she supposed. People could bond over a game. Nanette woke her the following day. Emily stumbled out of the tent, splashed water on her face, remounted her horse, despite her aching bones, and rejoined the army as it continued its march south through fallow lands and abandoned fields. The early cheer slowly gave way to grim determination, the sheer emptiness of the lands. An illusion. She was sure the locals were hiding in the forests, staying well clear of the army, wearing down the soldiers as much as it bothered her. Even Nanette was quieter, her probing questions dulled by the passage of time. Emily forced herself to think, considering what could be happening at Mountaintop and trying to think of a way to handle it. Nothing came to mind. She simply didn't know enough. She looked at Nanette.
Did you hear about anything at Mountaintop? Anything at all?
Not since I was forced to flee, Nanette said. I heard some stories over the years, but most of them were nothing more than pointless bragging and widely exaggerated tales, when they weren't outright nonsense. Zed, the guy you put in charge, was seemingly doing a good job, but lacked the driving ambition of a real mage master. It was probably a pleasant change for the staff. Aurelius told me they spent half their time plotting against each other. It's a wonder they got anything done, Emily said wryly. Nanette laughed. Aurelius used to say they didn't. Emily smiled, then sobered as the long march continued. She hadn't thought about Zed, and she mentally kicked herself. She should have. Zed and she had had a somewhat shaky start, yet he'd been a good man, and she'd heard things about his time as mage master, and he'd let her check his books when she'd been cursed. She swallowed hard, wondering what Void had done to him. He'd had no trouble overwhelming and crushing, perhaps even killing Grandmaster Gordian. Who knew what he might have done to Zed? The thought gnawed at her mind as the army made camp and rested for the second time, then resumed its march the following morning. The landscape was growing harsher, a grim reminder the country had had, still had, far worse problems than our revolutionary government and the exiled remains of the old order. The drought had been getting worse for years. She forced herself to think about the possibilities for finding more water, perhaps digging boreholes to search for underground reservoirs. King Jorlim should have worried about that, rather than renaming his city after himself. She didn't really blame the rebels for renaming the city again as soon as it fell into their hands. Sergeant Miles rode up beside her as the road started to widen.
"We'll be passing Curran shortly," he said. "Even if we stay out of the city, it could cause all sorts of problems."
Emily nodded. The briefing notes had been very clear. Curran was a mid-sized city, constructed on both sides of the river. The bridges running through the city were ideally situated to allow traders to cross the river, while the city itself made a great deal of money through levying tolls and hosting visitors in a network of inns and hostels. It had also enjoyed a great deal of independence, even under the monarchy, and wasn't entirely friendly to the revolutionary government. If there was anywhere likely to cause trouble for Jair, it was Curran. "Ask the scouts to check if we can march through the river," Emily said. She'd seen the river passing through Freedom City, the flow so badly weakened because of the drought. She'd seen boats trapped in dried mud and kids trying desperately to catch fish. "Or even if we can pass through the outer edges of the city."
"The river is still too deep for fording," Sergeant Miles said.
He shot her a brief smile.
"It was well thought of, but Jade thought of it first."
Emily had to smile. He is the professional.
"Yes, and this is a professional war," Sergeant Miles said. "But the rules keep changing."
He cantered away, catching up with Jade and Dater as the army started the march towards the city. It was bigger than Emily had realized, sprawling so widely it looked to cover the river as well as the land on either side. She couldn't help thinking of Venice and Amsterdam, cities built on networks of canals that served as roads. The water levels were higher than she'd expected. Judging from the bodies of water surrounding the city, it was possible the city fathers had seen the drought coming and taken precautions. Smart of them, she thought. They certainly did better than the rest of the kingdom. "This could get interesting," Nanette commented. She pulled on her reins, slowing her mount. "Have you noticed how few people there are in view?" Emily nodded. Nanette was right. That was not a good sign. Chapter 20. Emily's sense of unease continued to grow as they continued to ride towards the city. Curran should have been a bustling metropolis, even in the post-revolutionary world. The city was ideally placed and designed to funnel travelers through the streets, ensuring they had plenty of chances to spend money in the city before moving on. The stone roads were wide, lined with everything from inns and pubs to fishmongers, blacksmiths, and carpenters. The towering apartment blocks, so tiny compared to New York's, were yet amongst the biggest she'd seen on the nameless world. And yet, the streets were dead and cold. She frowned as her hands tightened on the reins. The streets were deserted, shops closed, and apartments were boarded shut or abandoned. It felt as if there had been thousands of people in the city only yesterday, but they'd vanished overnight.
She understood precisely why the population would want to stay well away from the army. Curran was hardly the first community to evacuate, rather than rely on the army's good faith. But it was strange. The city's population was too large to be easily absorbed within the formerly royal forests and countryside, even if they'd known how to survive. She wondered suddenly if the city had been evacuated downriver. That would have made some sense. The vanguard seemed to quiet down as they cantered across a wide stone bridge, taking the direct route through the streets and onto the southern side of the river. Emily tensed as the apartment blocks grew larger, casting dark shadows over the roads below. Dater had argued Curran was the perfect place for an ambush, and he might be right, if only because most of the riverboats had been removed. They simply didn't have time to put a pontoon bridge together, not without making use of local boats. And they'd been removed. It was easy to understand why the locals would want to keep them away from the army, but it was also easy to see it as a precursor to a trap. She closed her eyes and reached out with her senses. A handful of shops had basic anti-theft wards. A couple were more heavily warded, suggesting they belonged to local magicians. But there were no other traces of magic outside of the army. She reminded herself, sharply, that it might be meaningless. Gunpowder weapons didn't have magic. The plotters who tried to assassinate Alassa on her wedding day hadn't used any charms to slip through the wards. They'd simply walked through the wards as if they weren't there. The wardcrafters hadn't had the slightest idea their defenses had been penetrated until it was too late. The streets ahead started to narrow, although the road was still wide enough for 10 men to walk abreast. The stonework felt old, as if the city had been built on the ruins of another city, which might, she reflected, have been built on the remainders of a third city. Hoban, she wondered suddenly what had happened to Frida's boyfriend, had spent a night telling tales of a city that had been built and rebuilt so many times that it was both a bustling metropolis and an archaeological site. She'd planned to visit one day. She told herself that when the war was over, she could go on a long tour. It wasn't as if her presence would be welcome in the formerly allied lands. Too many people still blamed her for the chaos. A cavalryman cantered up and stopped in front of the van.
Sir, there's a rebel army to the south, centered on Greenock.
Emily pushed her horse forward as Jade nodded.
Understood, he said. We'll be through the city before the army can catch us, if it starts to advance.
Dater didn't sound convinced.
There's an army to the north and an army to the south, he snapped. We're going to be outflanked.
Sergeant Miles snorted. Dater shot him a look that promised trouble. Emily winced inwardly. The ride and the growing tension had worn the sergeant down, and yet she understood the sergeant's point. She'd seen the maps, too. The rebel armies didn't have anywhere near the skill they'd need to catch both Jade and Dater in a trap. It might look good on paper, if she was any judge, but actually closing the jaws of the trap would be pretty much impossible. A modern army from Earth with tanks and troop transports would have had trouble making it work. The rebels should know that even trying would give Dater and Jade a chance to defeat both armies separately, taking one off the game board before the other had a chance to intervene.
We keep moving, Jade said curtly.
He snapped his fingers at the messengers.
Deploy flankers to watch the roads and keep them clear, as the main body of the army makes its way through the city. Then dispatch two more troops of horsemen to watch the southern approaches.
Dater said nothing, but his displeasure was clear as the vanguard resumed the advance. Emily kept a wary eye on him as they crossed another river, marching onto an island that had been so covered in buildings that a few traces of the original island remained. The streets looked friendlier here. She heard people talking in the distance, words whispered on the wind. But there was still no one in sight. Her eyes narrowed as they marched towards a small stone fortress, really little more than a tiny watchtower topped with battlements. The city fathers had designed it for intimidation, rather than actual defense. She suspected the city's real defense lay in the rivers. Something moved on top of the battlements. Emily barely had a second to register the motion before an arrow hissed through the air, striking Dater's horse in the head. The beast let out an agonized sound, rearing in pain, then collapsed. Dater tumbled backward, barely catching hold of the horse's rear, long enough to ensure he didn't land on his head. He landed on his buttocks. His dignity might have taken a blow, a mortal wound, the waspish part of Emily's mind noted. But at least he'd survived. It could have been a great deal worse. Jade snapped commands as horses started to panic, threatening to run as their riders struggled to get them under control. Emily felt the horse underneath her buckle, rearing as another arrow flew through the air. There was something odd about the firing pattern. The second arrow struck another horse in the ass, but she didn't have time to worry about it. Her horse reared, then spun around and galloped away. She hastily cast a levitation spell. The horse fled into the distance as soon as she floated into the air, its passing disturbing the other horses. The ground shook. Emily barely registered the flash before an apartment block disintegrated, chunks of debris flying everywhere. She lifted her hands and cast the strongest shield she could, trying to protect the entire vanguard. Her head throbbed in pain as pieces of stonework crashed into the spell, shattering to dust and pebbles, which cascaded down to the street below. She was dimly aware of Nanette, Jade, and Sergeant Miles casting the same spell, just as another building, on the other side of the street, exploded. It was all she could do to switch the shield around to save the army. Another arrow hissed through the air, flying over her head and vanishing. She dropped hastily, landing on the street below. It made no sense. A skilled archer could have hit her easily. She'd seen archers hit targets at remarkable distances, and yet, he'd missed? She wasn't even sure her wards would have protected her. Arrows were fired with incredible force, some designed, or charmed, to punch through armor. She'd certainly notice the impact, even if it didn't kill her. She caught a glimpse of a dark figure, flitting from building to building. An instant later, another arrow flashed towards the army, striking yet another horse. The archer was trying to cause panic, rather than take out Jade or Dater. They'd been lured into a trap that made absolutely no sense. Or, a thought struck her as the mounted musketmen leveled their guns and fired a ragged volley towards the figure. Balls and bullets cracked into solid walls, blowing chips of stone and cascades of dust into the air. Emily was morbidly sure the mystery attacker was completely unharmed. A moment later, yet another arrow hissed towards them.
"Clear the streets!"
Dater bellowed. He was summoning more cavalry, a unit of infantry coming up behind them.
"Get these roads clear!"
Emily saw his thinking and cursed under her breath. Citizens were fleeing, running onto the streets in a desperate bid to escape the exploding buildings. They'd been so quiet she hadn't known they were there, and now it was too late. The army was just too far into the country to pull out, and Dater, of course, didn't want to pull out. They had to clear the streets, pushing the citizens out of the way and leveling buildings to make sure they got the army to its destination. Or, she shuddered. Dater might hope to take advantage of the attack to turn the army on the rebels instead, rather than concentrating on Void. Perhaps that was the point. The archer could have killed Dater easily, if he'd taken the shot.
"Keep them back,"
she shouted at Sergeant Miles. She could rely on him to accidentally knock Dater out if necessary. Neither Mariah nor Dater would be happy, but everyone would swear blind it had been a terrible accident.
"Nanette, you're with me."
She ran forward, tightening her protections. If she was wrong, she was exposing herself to the archer for nothing. She hopped up and over chunks of debris, motioning for Nanette to stay low. A dark figure caught her eye, holding an arrow in one hand. He threw it towards the army. She blinked in surprise as she realized he wasn't using a bow, and then darted back, moving with incredible speed. Her heart sank as he jumped up and onto a rooftop, a jump no normal human could make. Void had sent an enhanced soldier to block their way. "And I didn't even get a sniff of his presence," she thought as she flew after him. "Why not?" Emily landed on the roof and looked around. There was no sign of the enhanced soldier. He could have jumped to another roof, or... She looked at the roof and cursed as she saw the hatch. The soldier had torn it open almost effortlessly, then dived into the loft below before it was too late. She ducked down as Nanette landed beside her, peering into the darkened chamber. The soldier was nowhere to be seen. She muttered a spell to enhance her eyesight, lightening the gloom. He wasn't there. There were no open doors or windows or hints he might have kept going.
"Emily!"
Nanette sounded alarmed.
"There!"
Emily straightened just in time to see the enhanced soldier jumping to the next rooftop. Her mind spun in disbelief. How the hell had he done that? Spider-Man would have been hard-pressed to do it. Had she told Void about Spider-Man? She saw the guttering break a moment later and realized the truth. The enhanced soldier had darted to the edge of the roof, lowered himself down, and hung from the guttering, safely out of sight. She didn't know any normal human who could do anything of the sort, but... The soldier threw a rock towards the army, then jumped again. Emily summoned the strongest force punch she could and blasted him out of the air, knocking him into the nearest apartment block. The stone crumbled under the force of the impact. Incredibly, the soldier was still alive as he tumbled to the ground. Emily flew after him, ducking down as he picked himself up and jabbed a finger at her. The flight spell started to disintegrate a moment later, sending her tumbling.
She landed badly, stumbling as Nanette crashed down beside her. It could have been a great deal worse. Void really didn't want her dead. She heard voices growing louder as she marched towards the soldier. He seemed wounded, but it was hard to be sure. She sensed magic crackling around him, healing him. Magicians were warned not to try to heal themselves unless they were desperate. She supposed the soldier was desperate, if he had enough free will left to be aware of his situation. Void might have hollowed out his mind, turning him into a puppet. It wasn't impossible. The soldier started towards her. Emily cast a force punch reflexively. The impact slammed the soldier into the stone, smashing him into a bloody mess. Her stomach heaved, even though it was far from the worst thing she'd seen. The soldier's armor crackled, then collapsed into dust. She guessed it had been sustained by his magic, and now the magic was gone. Nanette peered down at the mess dispassionately, then turned away and swore. Emily followed her gaze. The fight had led them, and the army's vanguard, into a crossroads. Hundreds, perhaps thousands of citizens were gathering to the east and west, their eyes dark with hatred. They carried weapons, everything from pikes and farming tools to swords and muskets. She shuddered, realizing what the soldier had been trying to do. A clash between the army and the citizens here would be disastrous. The rebel plan might not have been as bad as she thought. They'd assumed the main body of the army would scatter if the vanguard and most of the commanding officers were killed in the city. Or she forced herself to turn and run towards the officers. Dater was surrounded by cavalry, his fingers pointing towards the advancing crowds. Jade was arguing with him, loudly. Emily glanced at Sergeant Miles and cursed under her breath. The sergeant looked ready to back Jade up, not to knock Dater out on his own. Here and now, it couldn't possibly be made to look like an accident. Dater looked at her, then raised his hand and screamed a simple command.
Charge!
Jade bellowed a counter-command, but it was too late. Dater's cavalry was loyal to him personally, not to Mariah or Alassa. They wheeled and followed their prince as he led them towards the crowd, waving his sword in the air. Emily felt sick. Scattering crowds was an old cavalry trick, but the crowd didn't have anywhere to go, not here. They'd bring the cavalry down by sheer weight of numbers, tearing Dater and his men apart, before turning their wrath on the rest of the vanguard and the army beyond. It was going to turn into a nightmare. She had no idea if Void or Jair or someone she'd never met had planned it that way, but Dater isn't going to forgive you for this, she thought, as she gathered her magic and cast a spell. And Mariah won't be very pleased either. She directed the spell towards Dater's armor, quickly worming her magic through his protections. He wheeled about, the cavalry charge crashing to a halt in confusion as he dropped his sword. Dater couldn't manipulate his protections on his own. His only hope was to get Emily before she broke through his protections, and he simply didn't have time. His mouth opened wide, an instant before his face turned green, and his body melted into his armor. Pieces of chainmail and runic metal crashed to the ground, revealing a frog perched on top of a horse. Someone giggled. Emily had no time to react. She summoned the frog into her hand and held him, held Dater by one leg. He was panicking, tiny arms and legs flailing. Emily understood. She'd had trouble coping the first time she'd been transfigured too.
We are not going to start a fight, she said, channeling Lady Barb as best as she could.
It wasn't easy.
We are going to take the army through the city and continue the advance as planned.
The cavalrymen stared at her, then at Jade, then back at her. They'd known what she could do, but she suspected they hadn't really believed. Or they'd assumed she wouldn't hex Dater in the back. Or she tried not to smile as it struck her the cavalrymen would have been a great deal less accepting if Jade had done it. They'd expect him to challenge the Prince General openly. Jade stepped forward.
Resume the advance, he ordered.
He snapped his fingers at the nearest messenger.
Inform the enemy army to the south that we intend to continue along the pre-approved path.
Emily rolled her eyes as the cavalrymen hurried back to work. The crowd slowly dispersing, now it was clear there wasn't going to be a fight. Bastards. They were a great deal happier taking orders from Jade, rather than a cheating sorceress. They probably thought Jade was going to have to deal with her. Or Nanette nudged her.
Nicely done, she said.
She poked the frog with one long finger.
He's going to be so mad.
Emily sighed. Dater would have killed dozens, perhaps hundreds of people before he died, and their hopes for a victory would have died with him.
She could deal with his anger later, if indeed he had the nerve to try. She wondered idly how he was going to react. Anger? Fear? It was possible, all too possible, that she'd effectively destroyed him. She might have broken him for the rest of his life.
So, Nanette said, when are you going to turn him back?
When things calm down, Emily said. And we can have a few words with him before he takes up his post again.
Chapter 21.
The army's passage through the city and the march to the next campsite passed without incident. Word had clearly spread up and down the ranks, judging by the officers and enlisted men glancing at her, and the frog in her hand, and then looking away before she spotted them. Dater seemed to be growing used to his new body, but, thankfully, he had the sense not to jump out of her hand and flee. The spell she'd used would wear off eventually. She hadn't wanted to take the risk of trapping him as a frog permanently, yet he didn't know it. And he had too many enemies who'd love to stomp on him to risk it.
I'll have a few words with him, if you like,
Sergeant Miles said, as soon as she'd ridden into the campsite.
And make a few things clear to him before it's too late.
Emily nodded, passing the frog to the sergeant. Dater would probably listen to him, if he'd listen to anyone. She sighed inwardly, as she remembered how many of his former officers had snickered at his predicament. He was going to have a hard time commanding respect now. And as word spread through Alluvia and Red Rose, she shook her head as she headed into the tent to splash water on her face and snatch something to eat before she slept. It wasn't her problem. Dater could have done the sensible thing and bided his time, waiting to see if the revolutionary government would wear out its welcome. Or, we'll go to Mountaintop tomorrow morning, she said, as Nanette joined her in the tent. And then we'll link up with the army again as it marches up the valley towards Dragon's Den. Nanette frowned.
You know what your problem is. You're too nice.
Emily shrugged. What would you have me do?
I would have made sure he couldn't do anything stupid right from the start,
Nanette said sharply.
And now he's going to want to put a knife in your back.
Yeah, Emily sighed heavily. I didn't want to kill him.
Sometimes you just have to cut your losses, Nanette told her. Dater isn't going to get any better. He's not going to grow up. He has too many people nagging him to recover their lost birthrights, and even Mariah will have trouble convincing him otherwise. He's too used to thinking of himself as top dog.
We shall see, Emily said. She pulled the blanket over her head. Good night. Sergeant Miles woke her the following morning. Emily stared at him blearily, then allowed him to lead her out of the tent. He looked tired, even though she was sure an old campaigner like him would have made certain to get enough sleep. She eyed him, concerned. She'd planned to leave him with Jade while she took Nanette to Mountaintop, but perhaps it would be wiser to take him with her instead. Or, she shook her head. Jade needed as many trustworthy NCOs and combat sorcerers as possible. He might need someone to keep an eye on Dater, too.
I took the opportunity to explain a few things to him once I undid the spell, Sergeant Miles said. I made it clear the war was being fought for civilization, not revenge or personal glory or power. And I told him that if he did anything like that again, I'd kill him.
Emily nodded curtly. Do you think he'll listen?
He's not the first young fool I've had to break down so I can build him up again, Sergeant Miles said.
He looked just like he used to, before the war.
He's more stubborn than most, I'll grant you, and he's used to wielding actual political power as well, or instead of magical power. But I can work with him. You gave him one hell of a shock, and it was well deserved. Hopefully we can turn him into something worthwhile before we have to actually kill him.
I hope so, Emily said. She liked Mariah. The younger girl didn't deserve to lose her husband like that, not after everything she'd done for the war. Where have you put him?
I let him sleep in my tent last night, Sergeant Miles said. I may have dropped a few hints I was going to punish you for the whole affair in hopes he wouldn't bear a grudge. It might or might not work. We will see.
I suppose we will, Emily said. She couldn't bring Miles to Mountaintop, as he was needed here. Make sure you keep Jade informed, too.
I will, Sergeant Miles said. And don't beat yourself up over the affair. You did as best as you could.
Emily mulled it over as she ate a hasty breakfast with Nanette, collected her tools and spoke briefly to Jade before readying the teleport gem. There was no sign of Dater.
She wondered idly how he was going to command his men, then shrugged. It might be better in the long run if the exiled army came apart at the seams. The officers could find places at court, the enlisted men could join Mariah's army, or simply find work in Red Rose. Given time, they'd assimilate, and the problem would be gone. There was simply nothing to be gained by keeping the exiled army intact, which may suggest that Mariah allowed it to join us in hopes it would be destroyed, she mused slowly. It was alarmingly cynical, but Alassa had been strikingly cold-blooded when she'd been younger as well. Or at least, she wouldn't be too concerned if the army didn't come back. Nanette grinned at her.
Ready?
Emily made sure Nanette was holding the teleport gem, then closed her eyes and triggered the spell. The ground lurched, the world snapping out of and into existence so quickly she was unsure if something had actually happened. She dropped an inch or two to the ground, her eyes opening wide. They were standing in the ashy remains of an ancient war, a desolate wasteland of barren hills, shattered stones, and gravel quarries that looked to have been worked by giants. The cold struck her a moment later, causing her to pull her leathers tightly around her. She cursed her oversight under her breath. She could have brought a cloak, but she'd forgotten the cold.
Welcome back, Nanette said. The school isn't too far from here.
Emily nodded curtly. Mountaintop had been established, from what she'd been told, in a subset of the old dwarven mines, tunnels that ran from the surface to so deep below the ground the inhabitants believed the sun to be a myth. The record books were a little vague on precisely what had happened to the dwarves, but Emily had her suspicions. It was quite possible they'd been wiped out, or driven so far underground they'd been effectively exiled, during the Fairy Wars. Demi-humans were rarely welcome within the Allied lands. She turned and followed Nanette as she picked her way through the rocky wasteland. Signs of wind and rain were everywhere, eroding the landscape. But there was no sign of human or animal life. No plants grew, not even hardy lichen. She thought she spotted traces of stone carving. Void had told her once that there was a lost magical art that had involved stone carving, but it was hard to be sure. The land was lifeless, lacking even the poison of the blighted lands. It was as if something had drained the life from the land itself. There might have been a nexus point here once, she reflected. She'd never heard any suggestion that Mountaintop had once had a nexus point, but it wasn't impossible. And it burned out a long time ago. Nanette seemed perkier somehow as they clambered over rocks and scuttled towards their destination. Emily scrambled after, feeling the cold slowly fading as sweat trickled down her back. The official entrance, the one she'd used years ago, was miles away. She glanced towards the peaks, wondering, not for the first time, if they were being watched. She'd never heard of students going outside, not when she'd attended the school, but Zed might have decided to change that. The darkened tunnels were claustrophobic even to people who didn't normally suffer from claustrophobia. There's no direct route into the school, Nanette said, as they reached a sheer cliff face that seemed to reach high into the sky. Rocks were scattered around the base, each one larger than Emily herself. But Aurelius showed me an indirect route. Emily stared at her back. And no one knows of it apart from you.
I don't know.
Nanette pulled at a rock, revealing a hole in the stony ground.
Aurelius claimed he'd set it up when he was a student himself, but I don't know if that was true. He might simply have widened the tunnels to make them usable, then hidden the entrance within the caves.
She lit a lantern, then dropped into the hole.
Come on down, she called. The water's fine.
Emily braced herself, then picked up her own lantern and scrambled down to the cave below. It was bigger than she'd realized, easily big enough for 5 or 6 large men. The walls were marked with strange carvings, her eyes seeming to slip over them without quite taking them in. Subtle magic, she noted. Aurelius, or whoever had carved them into the rock, had been cunning. It was hard to believe the cave was anything but a cave. She bit her lip hard. The concept the cave might lead to a tunnel was nearly unthinkable. She could practically feel the magic plucking in her mind, trying to turn her away. Nanette shifted another rock, revealing a tunnel sloping down into the earth. Emily followed her into the tunnel, then waited as Nanette pulled the rock back into its place. The tunnel was disturbingly narrow, weirdly proportioned. It felt as if it had been dug by children, the roof so low she had to duck to avoid cracking her head against the stone. She guessed it was a simple trick to discourage visitors, rather than greeting them with armed guards.
A man might hesitate to crawl into a tunnel too low and narrow to allow him to turn around and escape if he ran into something he couldn't handle. Not that it would have stopped Kat, Emily reflected, or Jade.
The tunnel network is much larger than you may have realized, Nanette said.
Her voice echoed oddly.
The school occupies only a tiny percentage of the tunnels, leaving the remainder strictly alone. Aurelius hinted there might have been an agreement at some point, but he didn't know much about it. I don't think he really believed in it.
How come? Emily had seen enough strangeness to know there were agreements everywhere.
Why didn't he believe?
I don't know, Nanette said.
He'd certainly spent quite a bit of time exploring the tunnels as a young student. I saw his files once. He holds the school record for disciplinary action for being caught beyond the doors. He might not have seen anything to suggest the agreement was still in force, if indeed there was an agreement. A lot of records were destroyed at one point.
Emily scowled.
Aurelius? Not unless he was a lot older than he claimed, Nanette said. He'd have to be over 500 years old by the time I first met him.
She sighed, then kept walking as the tunnels started to widen. Emily shivered, keeping a wary eye on the lantern. Using magic down here, even shielded by thousands of tons of rock, might set off alarms in the school above. Gusts of cold wind brushed against her skin, icy sensations washing down her spine as she picked her way through the increasingly large caves and chambers. Droplets of water fell from the darkness, splashing on the ground. She shivered as she saw an underground river rushing through the caves, coming into the open for a few short meters before retreating back into the tunnels. Anyone who fell into the fast-moving water would drown before they could save themselves. She recalled exploring the caves with Frida back when they'd first met, and felt guilty. Her friend was in Whitehall at Void's mercy. God alone knew what he was doing to her.
He wouldn't hurt her, Emily told herself. She isn't a threat to him.
A thought struck her as she peered into the next set of caves.
There were monsters here, she said. Where are they?
I don't know. Nanette sounded edgy. Emily guessed she'd been pondering the same question.
Aurelius told me they were hibernating, that they wouldn't bother us as long as we didn't bother them, but I don't know what's happened to them.
Emily shuddered, keeping a wary eye on the flickering shadows as they kept moving. The caves had been crammed with sleeping creatures once upon a time, cockatrices and basilisks and monsters that looked like crosses between centipedes and gorillas and dinosaurs and things she had no name for, things she didn't want to believe existed. Where were they? The desolate landscape above them could provide all the room such creatures needed, but almost none of the food. Could they fish in the underground rivers? Did they eat each other? Or had they attacked the school? It was hard to believe the monsters could tear through the defenses, but it was far from impossible. Mountaintop was in no state to defend itself. Nanette paused, then closed her eyes and walked straight towards a stone wall. Emily opened her mouth to shout a warning an instant before Nanette stepped through the wall and vanished. Emily touched the stone, shaking her head in disbelief. It felt real, too real. Her mind made it real. Emily closed her eyes and concentrated, drawing on all the discipline she'd learned over the years as she walked forward. The stone was no longer there. She felt a gust of warm air as her eyes snapped open. The stone above her head was glowing a dull red, like embers of burning coal. She heard a dull rumble. The air felt hot, almost feverish. Magic sparkled around her.
You made it, Nanette grinned. I was starting to think you wouldn't.
Emily felt sweat on her back.
What is this place?
Above us? It was once the core of the school, Nanette said. They designed the ward network to channel power throughout the rest of the tunnels. Aurelius told me there was so much unfocused magic within the chamber that it was extremely difficult to police. I could practically come and go as I liked, as long as I was careful. I knew the patrol patterns. I rarely got caught. When I did, she shrugged. I had a good excuse lined up.
She kept walking as the tunnel started to narrow again. Emily followed, trying not to touch the hot stone. It felt as if they were walking into a furnace. The glow waxed and waned, sometimes so bright it hurt her eyes, sometimes so dull she was glad of the lantern. Magic kept sparking, sometimes giving her little electric shocks. Her senses were a mess. There was so much raw magic in the air she couldn't sense Nanette, let alone anything beyond. Her skin crawled. The stone was starting to look decidedly liquid. They used to drain power from expelled students and feed it into their wards, Emily thought numbly.
The process had been brutal, inevitably fatal to the students who'd been turned into unwilling batteries. It hadn't been very efficient either. Now they're feeding power from Ashworth into the wards instead. She glanced at the stone above her head as the tunnel started to level out, the glow revealing hints of other tunnels pointing into the darkness. Nanette ignored them as the tunnel rose again, hints of metal clearly visible within the stone. Emily could sense the magic taking shape and form as it slowly fed into the wards. She frowned as she realized the magic had been more efficient than she'd thought. The original designers had allowed for sloppy magic and done what they could to capture the energy and direct it back into the wards. They might have been monsters. She dreaded to think how many young men and women had died in the chamber nearby. But they'd been creative craftsmen. It was just a shame they'd chosen to use their talents for evil. They probably thought they had no choice, Emily thought. And Nanette held up a hand, stopping in front of a stone wall. Emily frowned as she peered closer. Someone had drawn the outline of a door on the stone, as if the mere act of drawing the shape was enough to make it real. Nanette drew a wand from her belt and pressed it against the stone. The outline sharpened, the stone slowly flowing into a different form. Emily had to smile. Aurelius, or whoever had set up the passageway, had cheated. He hadn't concealed the entrance behind a spell. Instead, he'd transfigured the door into stone and left it there. No wonder it had escaped detection for so long. There was so much raw magic pervading the tunnels that no one could hope to sense its presence, let alone work out what it was. Here we go, Nanette said. Are you ready? Emily braced herself. Do it. Nanette pushed the door open. Magic crackled around them, flowing into the corridors like water. Emily stumbled back, realizing, too late, that they'd made a deadly mistake. And the full weight of the spell crashed down on her. Chapter 22. The deluge of magic nearly broke her. Emily gritted her teeth, struggling against the sheer weight of the spell. It was pressing on her, trying to drain her will and leave her utterly helpless. Her thoughts threatened to fragment, her mental defenses splintering before she even realized she was under attack. She was barely aware of Nanette staggering as well, dropping to her knees as the spell worked its way through her defenses. There was no time to worry about her. Emily could barely take care of herself. She drew on her magic, only to discover, too late, it was useless. The spell was just too powerful to fight. It had caught hold of her before she'd even started to tighten her defenses, and yet, it had its weaknesses. It didn't seem to know quite what it wanted her to do, as if it had put her in its power without a clear idea of what it wanted. It was easy to believe that, if she let the spell have its way, she'd just stay where she was, helpless, until she starved. Her mind twisted, her thoughts spinning in circles. The spell needed to be fought, and yet, even trying to fight made things worse. He taught you better than that, she told herself. Void and her other tutors had forced her to learn how to defend herself mentally, even if she couldn't call on her magic. Use it. The spell seemed to twist as it bored into her mind. Emily cursed the designer as she forced herself to analyze it. She needed to open her mind to study the spell, and yet opening her mind meant rendering herself vulnerable. The spell twisted like a living thing, daring her to open her mind wider and wider. It almost made her want to surrender. She could feel it crawling through her mind, taking control. The mere act of trying to resist the spell was definitely making it worse. And yet, she had no choice. Focus, she thought. Cover your thoughts and push the spell out. She pushed as hard as she could, her head starting to ache as she bullied her thoughts into motion. The spell pushed back, growing stronger and stronger with every passing moment, but piece by piece, she cleared it out and shoved the remainder of her defenses back into place. Void had done well, she acknowledged sourly. The spell wasn't just designed to sweep away her defenses as if they weren't even there, but to lull her into a belief there was nothing wrong. If she hadn't been trying to break into the school, she feared the spell would have overwhelmed her. The students would be going through the motions like clockwork automatons, unaware they'd lost their freedom. How could they recover something they didn't know they'd lost? The world shuddered, then snapped back into place. Nanette was kneeling on the ground, hands pressed against her head. Emily stepped forward, pieces of glass crunching under her feet. They'd dropped the lanterns, she noted. They'd been lucky they hadn't started a fire below the school. Mountaintop was in no state to deal with it.
She braced herself, then pushed a finger against Nanette's forehead, trying to shield her from the worst of the spell. Nanette grunted, nearly stumbling against Emily before she righted herself and climbed to her feet. Her face was pale, her hands shaking. Emily was surprised she hadn't managed to free herself. Void had trained her, too. Unless he didn't want Nanette completely immune to his tricks, she thought. He didn't want her to take his place.
Bones, Nanette managed. Bones and blood. Take a deep breath, Emily advised.
She could still feel the spell, woven into the school's wards and backed by the power of the Ashworth Nexus Point.
Do you want a drink?
He had me.
Nanette's breathing came in fits and starts.
He nearly had me.
Emily wanted to offer comfort, but she had no idea what to say. Instead, she drew her canteen from her belt and pressed it against Nanette's lips. Her entire body was quivering unsteadily, sweat beating on her exposed skin. Emily waited for Nanette to take a long drink, then took a sip herself. Void had drilled her relentlessly in protecting herself from mental attack, and yet she'd come very close to losing outright.
We need to move, Nanette said as she forced herself to straighten, and quickly.
She pushed the door closed and tapped it with her wand again. The door melted back into the stonework, completely invisible. Emily was impressed. Her head was pounding, and she didn't dare try to open her senses for fear of letting the compulsion spell get back into her mind. But she was sure no one could so much as guess the door was there. Even if they got a hint of its existence, they'd need to spend hours, days perhaps, looking for it. Aurelius had done a good job. Nanette stumbled slightly as she led the way down the corridor. Emily briefly considered suggesting she remain behind, but Nanette was the only one who knew where the secret passageways and compartments were concealed. The tunnels were dark, lit only by flickering torches that seemed constantly on the verge of blinking out. It was hard to navigate, even with magic. The shadows ebbed and flowed like living things, making it hard to see. Emily wished they hadn't broken the lanterns. She knew from experience that night vision spells didn't work in the tunnels. She tensed as they rounded the corner and nearly walked into two students, a boy and a girl. They wore the uniform she remembered, a knee-length skirt for the girl, a pair of dark trousers for the boy. But there was something odd about them. Their faces were blank as they walked down the corridor, moving as if they were unaware of each other's presence. They were neither too close nor too far apart. It looked as if they were puppets dangling from strings. She smiled, then shivered. It was far too close to the truth for her peace of mind.
Don't touch them, her mind yammered. Don't touch them and they won't know you're here.
The air of unreality grew stronger as the two students walked past her, eyes fixed on something only they could see. Emily had learned the hard way to pay attention to her surroundings in Whitehall, and Mountaintop was even worse. A student who didn't remain aware of her surroundings at all times was one who might be hexed or jinxed or cursed, or simply made the butt of everyone's jokes. No one, absolutely no one, could simply ignore two grown adult strangers wearing leathers rather than tutoring robes. And yet the students just walked into the distance. Their gait from behind was just as odd.
Interesting, Nanette said tartly. They're advanced alchemical students heading to the alchemy lab.
Emily looked at her. How can you tell?
The badges on their blazers, Nanette said. Anyone wearing such a badge has the right to skip lessons, as long as they do the work in the labs instead. And the private labs are down that way.
I'll take your word for it, Emily said.
Which way now?
Mountaintop became more and more eerie as they made their way through a series of corridors. The students moved in silence, never speaking nor fighting. The prefect stood uselessly by the walls, eyes staring at nothing. The bullies she recalled from her brief time at the school were doing nothing, just waiting for classes to start. Tutors walked past, faces so blank she knew they were enchanted too. From time to time, she thought she saw flickers of individuality on a handful of faces, but they were gone again before she could try to take advantage of it. The spell was just too powerful for most students to fight. She knew she'd been lucky to keep her thoughts isolated long enough to escape. A row of young students, first years from their appearance, walked past her in perfect unison. There was none of the rowdy behavior she recalled, none of the harassment from well-born or older students. She would have welcomed it if she hadn't seen their blank faces. They hadn't stood a chance. They'd barely known even a handful of spells, if that, when they'd enrolled. Void had snuffed out their independence, and they hadn't even noticed. How could they? The headmaster is a marvelous man, she muttered, and this is the best school I've ever been to.
Nanette glanced at her.
What?
Never mind, Emily said. It would take too long to explain. Where do we go now?
There's a power focus in there, Nanette said, as they reached the top of the corridor and stopped outside a solid stone door. If we check it, we should be able to calculate where the power is going.
Emily took up overwatch position and glanced from side to side as Nanette started to break into the chamber. The wards might notice if they cracked the locks, even if it was school tradition to try to break into sealed rooms and wards. Nanette muttered a handful of spells as she carefully tangled the wards, trying to isolate the locks from the network without accidentally setting off the alarms. Emily was impressed. Void had drilled her on breaking into places too, but Nanette was just plain good.
Ha!
Nanette stepped back as the door opened.
Got it!
Good, Emily said. She frowned as she sensed the magic within the room.
Be careful.
Nanette stepped inside. Emily followed her, looking around with interest. The chamber was crammed with gemstones, glowing faintly as they channeled immense power through the school's wards. It was strange to realize it was nothing more than a way station, rather than the source of the power itself. She studied the runes and spell circles carefully, noting how they'd been designed to function without a specific master. The average magician would base their wards on blood, but that would have made life difficult in a school where the headship didn't remain in a single family. Mountaintop had to use inferior methods instead.
Keep an eye on me, Nanette said, as she knelt by the circle. If I start to fall, catch me before my head crosses the line.
Emily nodded, bracing herself as Nanette reached out a hand. Magic sparkled around her fingertips, the glow lighting up the room. The magic shifted as gemstones brightened and darkened, each one sending a pulse of light across the chamber before darkening again. She waited, ready to catch Nanette if something went wrong. Instead, Nanette pulled back her hand and shook it as the magic faded. She looked a little more confident as she stood once again.
They're bringing the power in through the Mage Master's office, Nanette said slowly. It is a secure room, but...
Emily frowned. She'd assumed Void would put the linked chat parchments, or whatever he was using to channel power from Ashworth Manor to Whitehall, into the old power chamber, but evidently not. The Mage Master's office would be as secure as the current occupant could make it, yet every student who fancied himself a sorcerer would try to test himself against the defenses. It would only take one, she reflected, to cause a disaster. Or maybe not. The entire school was entranced. If anyone had a thought about trying to break into the Mage Master's office, it would be squashed and erased before they had a chance to put it into practice. He might have decided not to risk bringing the power flow directly into contact with the remnants of the old chamber, Emily said. Hundreds, perhaps thousands of young magicians had died there. That would leave a mark that wouldn't fade in a hurry. Or he might think he didn't need to bother.
Yeah.
Nanette walked past her, looking more like her old self. And that might be what he wants you to think. Emily nodded as they slipped back into the corridors. They were empty, without even a single student running to class before the doors were shut and locked. There was no sign of any of the prefects, let alone the proctors she recalled from the months she'd spent in the school. The entire complex was running like clockwork, so perfectly there was no need for any supervision. Her lips quirked as they picked up speed, heading towards the center of the school. It was just like walking through a Borg ship. And if this is what he has in mind for the Allied lands, she reflected, we really do have to stop him.
I doubt I can get back into Aurelius's old chambers, Nanette said. Whoever took his place will have wiped the wards down to bedrock, then put them back together from scratch. Can you get into Zed's rooms?
Emily shook her head. He wouldn't have keyed me into his wards, she said. We were never that close. Nanette shot her a sharp look.
And yet you left the school in his hands.
He was a good choice, Emily said flatly. He was more interested in education than playing political games. The corridor widened suddenly, revealing a warmly lit chamber dominated by an oversized wooden desk. A middle-aged woman sat behind it. She wasn't much smaller than Emily, but the table made her look like a midget. Her eyes were blank, just like everyone else within the school. She sat as if she were posing for a picture, rather than working or simply pretending to work. There was nothing on the desk. No papers, no parchments, nothing. It struck Emily suddenly that the poor secretary, trapped in her own mind, was simply getting up, sitting at her desk, and then going back to bed. She had no idea she wasn't doing anything beyond following orders like clockwork. Nanette snickered.
And to think everyone used to fear her.
Emily shot her a sharp look as they headed towards the door.
Who was she? No one really knows where she came from, not originally.
Nanette sounded amused, despite Emily's disapproval.
30 or so years ago, she was appointed as a secretary and started climbing up the ladder. By the time I met her, she was far more than just a secretary. Aurelius told me she did a lot of the administrative work, giving her a great deal of power over the school. She could raise someone up or crush them if she wished. There weren't many people who'd cross her. Even Aurelius was a little scared of her.
Really? Emily wasn't so sure.
How did she get away with it?
She was strictly neutral, as far as anyone knew, Nanette said, as she started to work on the door. She was more interested in keeping the school running rather than playing petty power games. But, she winked, she was already in a good position. She didn't want to break the spell. Emily helped her to open the door, then inched into the corridor beyond. The compulsion spell felt stronger here, as if the wards the tutors used to preserve a little privacy for themselves had been absorbed into the spell. She kept her mind under tight control, and yet, as she kept walking, she could sense more and more power flowing into the school. Void had done a good job. If the power link could be firmly established, Mountaintop could flourish into something new. We might have to keep the link open, she thought. It might be better to move the school to one of the reactivated nexus points to the south. She stopped outside the Mage Master's door and braced herself, watching as Nanette started to try to unlock the wards. Zed didn't seem to have warded himself properly, something that set alarm bells ringing at the back of her mind. Zed was an alchemist, and any alchemist fool enough to ignore basic precautions would soon be a dead alchemist. She'd had it drilled into her time and time again. Zed had enemies. One or more of them would find a way to assassinate or simply humiliate him in hopes of taking his post. And yet, the door clicked open almost effortlessly. It didn't feel right. Emily peered into the room. It was larger than she recalled, a giant desk, a comfortable chair, walls lined with bookcases. Zed himself sat at his chair, staring at nothing. Behind him, she saw a glowing maze of crystals spinning in a beautiful pattern. The magic was stronger here, strong enough to touch. She could sense it even with her inner eye squeezed firmly closed. The power was flowing through the link and straight into the school.
Be careful, Nanette hissed. I know.
Emily stepped into the room, half expecting something to spring to life and grab her.
You stay well back.
She kept moving forward until she was too close to Zed. He should have sensed her presence. She was invading his personal space, but he showed no reaction. She was almost disappointed. He was as entranced as the rest of his school. And yet, she looked past him, towards the crystal lattice. It was more complex than she'd realized, pieces of glowing crystals moving in and out of pocket dimensions. Void had taken yet another of her concepts and improved upon it. And if I pull out the wrong thing, she thought, I'm going to trigger an explosion at both ends of the link. Something moved behind her. She spun around. Zed was standing, blank eyes staring at her. Her mouth was suddenly dry. Something was very wrong. He took a step forward, and then his body dissolved into a cloud of multicolored light.